Your gift to KPFT could double if your company has a matching gift program. Your help makes a difference. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. Coming up next, Technology Bites.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to Technology Bites.
Perfect
hey,
show.
No.
It's not me, man.
We are in the unair-conditioned studios of KPFT. The lights are down. Our fan is on.
Our lone fan.
We're having a post-disaster.
We're business continuity disaster recovery Technology Bites.
Yeah.
Houston is underwater. It's a national event. We can now talk about Houston.
That's true.
Yes, we can. We usually shy from mentioning where
I just want to comment on, it's amazing to me how many people read CNN and pay attention, because my tweet got picked up by CNN for the flood story.
Really? Missed that.
And with the photo I took of the car that was half submerged on my street. And I started getting emails all of a sudden from people like, do you have a Twitter account? it was very weird.
So they asked for permission? There's going to be
no
suing?
I don't know what I don't know what the rules are. I was not unhappy about it. You know, they just basically embedded the tweet. So
okay, so it's attributing to you. It's public.
Completely attributed.
Okay.
And
I'm pretty sure public tweets are public, and so they can do with it what they want.
As long as they do it in a certain format.
They probably, as long as they keep the tweet and who it came from with everything.
Because the tweet is out there, they basically just showcase or highlight this thing that exists on Twitter. So it's just an extension. It's It's kind of slimy because, you know, the news organizations are able to derive content. And one of the most distressing things is that the news organizations will pay attention to Twitter during an emergency or a disaster. Yes. And so they'll see someone tweet out like, you know, oh my God, there's a gunman in the school. I'm ducking for cover or something like that. And then the news agencies will start tweeting at them and say, you know, where are you? Can you talk to us? It's like, I'm trying to say, I'm trying not to die. I had a chance to tell everybody.
I was trying to be quiet, but my phone's been making chirping noises.
My phone keeps beeping, and the gunman now knows my location. So, anyway. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Apparently, Lee didn't want to come and hang out in the disaster-stricken KPFT studios tonight.
With the Tesla short out? I guess he gave that back. That's
he doesn't have that anymore, I don't think.
He's batting 500 or so. He's hit and miss these days.
You can't count on him for nothing. Oh, well.
Pete, are you dry in San Antonio?
Oh, yeah.
Weather? Did you have any weather of, you know, consequence out there during this event? I know you've had weather of consequence in the past. But.
Yeah, well, I mean, before last week's show, all that hail damage, we were right in one of the worst parts for that. But since then, no. You know, I've watched the Houston thing. I mean, when I used to live in Houston, twice we got flooded out of our house. We were even on CNN once. They had a little bit of footage of us getting off an airboat after being evacuated from our house. So yeah, you know how many people are mostly it was people at work going, Were you on CNN this weekend?
Jay knows what that feels like.
I'm a meme.
Well, they just did the picture because it was like, you know, my wife was pregnant and we had the dog and a little kid and that kind of thing.
You were in a wife beater.
Yeah, yeah. No, not that. Mostly they wanted the pregnant woman to like say she was scared or whatever. And when she was like, no. You know, it was
you,
like,
sir, are you
like,
scared?
It was like standing in a bathtub, you know, and it just fills up because that's what it was. It wasn't like, you know, on the movies where the dam breaks and the, you know, wall of water comes in. No, it was like suddenly there's like water starts running into under the doors. And then after a while, it's at your ankles and then it just keeps going up. But
and there's the sewer rats.
Alligators.
The floating fire ant mounds.
Some unusual size.
Fortunately, if you just leave the doors shut, then all that stuff
fireballs. Those mounds of fire ants that go floating down the water.
Were those out? Did you see any?
I've heard that they're. I mean, they're.
I saw
always
pictures.
Yeah.
Of them.
And then you know they're a nice kind of dome floating on the water until they hit something, and then it just spreads
and attacks.
It's like a little fire ant hand grenade. Or
yeah,
water
one thing
balloon.
You know is that your refrigerator floats.
Hey,
some people were using refrigerators as flotation devices.
Yeah, I saw
when
a video of that.
Flooded.
Yeah,
some refrigerators.
They must have taken the doors off or something because there weren't doors on it. I don't think.
I don't know if they were using them as small boats or.
Well, the first guy tried to ride inside it, and then that didn't work so well, so they took the doors off.
Mm. So everyone kept their data operations up. All the businesses ran, or did y'all shut down?
No, we our offices were closed, but all of our tech was working, so we.
I don't
were
think
able
any
to maintain
anything
it.
Happened. I think I looked at a chart, and it looked like the worst part of the rain was all to the west and northwest. Mostly was where the
a lot of the big
rain
red
fell.
Globs were right over my house. It wasn't like the one that the couple, you know, Memorial Day when it was just training over our house. This one just stalled, or it was moving very slowly. So I remember I got up around 5 o'clock in the morning or so, and I looked outside, and you know there was water up to the curb, you know, just the normal gutter kind of water flowing down the street where it builds up when it rains. And then I looked out another hour later, and it was like up in the yard, so it was coming up fast. But fortunately, it slacked off and receded.
Did you hear somebody in your mind go, "How high's the water, Jay Lee?"
No, I did not.
That's too bad.
Curb high and rising.
I checked IRC. There's no flooding in there.
So
that's right, Jay will kick him.
I'm not even on there. Let me get on
there. Yeah, no one's in there. IRC is dead right now.
Oh, yeah. You can visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out on IRC. We use the server irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo.
And it's the channel Tech Bytes if you want to participate.
Who's a pretty bird? What are you doing?
Thank God I have this.
You are.
R. Yes, yeah, so you can hang out with us on the IRC, visit us on the web. I didn't get that.
It was your alarm code for your house.
Oh, you're imitating my bird imitating the alarm code. No, the really good one is when he does the microwave beep beep beep.
Now, does he get the alarm code right to where we could actually like record that?
My alarm code. Strategically, the same sound for every button.
Okay. Okay.
It's
not like
a phone thing.
Oh, it's not DTMF.
It's not DTMF. No.
Okay. So no parrot. Is that a parrot precaution, or did most of the alarm systems don't come with those?
I don't think most of the alarms are.
Mine doesn't make any kind of a sound at all. That's why I'm asking. I thought maybe yours actually did do cool.
No. It's just okay. Beep. One beep. Same beep for all buttons.
I'll have to find another way to infiltrate the Jay Lee household.
Just come up and knock on the door.
Knock, yeah.
Hey, it's me. What's going on?
Hey, guys.
I mean, you know, if you show up at my house unannounced, you know, it'll go fine until you leave, and then I'm going to get chewed out for my friends being such inconsiderate so-and-sos. All right, so anyway, and I need to get an announcement up. I guess we're going to have the Geek Gathering is coming up soon. Not that soon, but soon enough. So we'll get some information up about that. We'd love to see you come out to a Geek Gathering.
Week and a half.
Yeah.
So no, 2 weeks.
Two and a half weeks.
Yeah, May 6th.
All right, well, let's get on with the show. It's going to be a great evening of Tech Bytes, or Technology Bytes, here on KPFT, or wherever you're listening, if you're listening to the podcast, or joining us on one of the affiliate stations.
Streaming from abroad.
Yes, streaming abroad. Hey!
Streaming what?
Nothing. All right, well, let's go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bytes Info Shot with Peter Hughes. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, well, it bears repeating. We've mentioned it in the past, and if you dodge the flooding and you're not, you know, busy figuring out if you have insurance or whatever, we do have the pledge drive coming up. And you can go to kpft.org and pledge ahead of time. And maybe if everybody gets in there and does their part, then we can either have a very short pledge drive for Technology Bytes, or even better, not one at all. Just have it online, have all the geeks pledge that way. You know, go to kpft.org. They do the pledges. When they tally it all up, they go, wow, you guys already earned your thing. And then we'll just have regular shows. So just a little something to think about as a story. Now, we would figure we're not going to ask you to pledge if you're one of the people who are part of Intel's evolution. And you know what the evolution is? The evolution is away from the PC industry, and the other part of their evolution is 12,000 up to 12,000 layoffs. Ouch. So basically, you know, it ends up being in sort of the business news stuff. But, you know, so they were announcing their earnings for the first quarter of this year, and then they paired that up with a major announcement of worldwide layoffs that will reduce global employment numbers at Intel by up to 12,000 staffers. It clarified that the staffing cuts will affect approximately 11% of Intel's global workforce, and that the layoffs were meant to, quote, accelerate evolution from a PC company to one that powers the cloud and billions of smart connected computing devices. A majority of the affected employees will learn about their status within 60 days, while other staffers will have to wait until 2017. So how's that hanging over your head if you're an Intel staffer? I don't know anybody that works for Intel, but, you know, wouldn't that suck if you have to wait until sometime next year to know for sure about your job? This comes out as Intel announced reduced revenue projections for the next full year, along with a search for a new chief financial officer. The restructuring that sort of changed their focus is going to, you know, cost the company $1.2 billion. but they insist the move will eventually save it money in the end, so that it'll actually be a net gain for them. The announcement listed growth industries such as data center, Internet of Things, memory and connectivity businesses, as well as growing client segments such as two-in-ones, gaming, and home gateways. Its rebuking of the PC sector didn't specify anything in particular about market uptake of the company's Skylake processor launch in late 2015. So, you know, that's out there. But they did, you know, earlier there was the announcement that they were moving away from the so-called, you know, TikTok upgrade path to something else. And I'm guessing that if you're waiting for the talk or the tick or whatever, it's going to be a little while coming, and it may include getting laid off if you work at Intel. In better news, I guess, this one, the Supreme Court on Monday declined to hear a challenge from the Authors Guild and other writers, which claimed that Google scanning books for, you know, there's if you've ever done a search, you may have noticed that books come up under Google's search results if you've done the right, you know, if you had the right phrases that triggered it, you know, or that matched something. They claimed that Google's scanning of their books amounts to wanton copyright infringement and not fair use. The Guild urged the High Court to review a lower court decision in favor of Google that the writers said amounted to, quote, unprecedented judicial expansion of the fair use doctrine. Of course, the Supreme Court disagreed, I guess. It issues a June decision by the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals that essentially said it's legal to scan books if you don't own the copyright. The Authors Guild originally sued Google, saying that serving up search results from scanned books infringes on publishers' copyrights, even though the search giant only shows restricted snippets of the work. The writers also claim that Google's book search snippets provide an illegal free substitute for their work, and that Google Books infringes their derivative rights and revenue they could gain from a licensed search market. The Supreme Court let stand the lower court opinion that rejected the writers' claims. That decision means that Google Books won't have to close up shop or ask book publishers for permission to scan. In the long run, the ruling could inspire other large-scale digitization projects. You know, the deal is, it's not like you could go to Google Books and, like, search, you know, okay, search page 1 to 30 of, I don't know, the new Harry Potter, you know, the Harry Potter book. It doesn't work that way. If you did a phrase and that matched a phrase in a book, you would see that snippet, and you could see that, you know, the scan of that page with the phrase that you were looking for highlighted. So from a research perspective, it could be very valuable for people. I've seen it and used it, and they get a very obscure books. You know, one of the things, that's been unfortunate is, obviously we've talked about it on the show, copyrights have been, there have been sort of copyright maximalism. And so books published after about like 1927 or 1920, somewhere in there, the number before that, when there was the old copyright laws where things expired more easily, now there are tons of orphan works that are still copyrighted, but nobody really cares or owns them. But because of the copyright, you can't, they aren't published, they aren't available, they aren't able to be found. And frankly, Google Books is one of the places that's by getting them now means that when the day comes that they are open, that Google will have them, as opposed to them just disappearing like a lot of books. You know, fair use, it's a concept that's part of U.S. copyright law, and it is a defense to copyright infringement if you meet certain conditions. The U.S. Copyright Office says the defense is decided on a case-by-case basis. The distinction between what is fair use and what is infringement in a particular case will not always be clear or easily defined, according to the Copyright Office. There's not a specific number of words, lines, or notes that may be safely taken without permission. Acknowledging the source does not substitute for obtaining permission, the U.S. Copyright Office says. There are, however, at least four factors that judges must consider when deciding fair use: the purpose of the use, the nature of the copyrighted work, the amount and substantiality of the portion taken, and the effect of that use upon the potential market. The only thing, the Supreme Court basically just left the lower ruling standing. The only thing they did say is that Justice Elena Kagan did not participate. I guess that means she had some involvement with an earlier version of the case or some other reason where she recused herself. Google obviously had urged the justices to side against the writers because in the end, their works would be more readily discovered. Because obviously you can find, by this, you find the book, and if it turns out you need it for whatever you were searching for or you know, were researching, then you can go find the source material and you can go buy a copy of the book. Because they don't, you know, like I said, they don't show you. You can't really get the whole book. I mean, there's some tricks where you can, if you kind of know what's on the next page or the page before, you can do some searches that will probably get you there. But, you know, in general, it's, I think this was the right decision and this is good for Google and even the writers who sued and the public in general for all these, all this stuff. Google has scanned and made machine readable more than 20 million books. Many of them are nonfiction and out of print. And that's sort of the important part of this whole thing. One interesting change in technology, one study, the U.S. Census Bureau. So it's not like this isn't one of those studies where it's like new study find, you know, one weird fruit that will help you lose weight. It's not one of those. This is like a legit study. New study from the U.S. Census Bureau. More and more households, American households across a range of incomes, are relying on mobile internet service as their sole means for being online. In fact, mobile internet service has reached the point where it now, quote, appears to be competing more directly with wired internet connections. That's according to Julia McHenry, chief economist of the Office of Policy Analysis and Development. They surveyed nearly 53,000 households to gather the data. It shows that 3/4 of American households with internet are using a DSL cable or fiber connection to get online at home, which is obviously a pretty big majority. So 3/4, you know, 75%, but that is a drop from 82% in 2013. On the flip side, the proportion of homes that only used a mobile internet connection went from 10 to 20% in the same period. As the Washington Post points out, roughly 1 in 5 online households in the U.S. is now mobile only. So, you know, cities like New York are pushing to make universal broadband a reality for low-income households. The FCC has expanded its Lifeline program to include mobile connections, and the future of universal access likely won't include broadband at all. And this is an Engadget article. It says, just think of all the things humanity could accomplish if no one ever had to complain to Comcast customer service again. So, obviously one of the things is LTE is faster than, you know, if you look at just raw speed, then if you're not doing a lot, you know, obviously if you're going to watch Netflix, you better have a special program. I know there's the T-Mobile thing and some of those. If you're going to watch a lot of videos and your mobile account doesn't have some kind of special consideration, then you might be in trouble. But if you're just doing some social media and getting email and so on, a lot of these plans that give you 10 gigs of data a month or more, end up costing less by themselves than you paid, you know, than if you had a household, you know, if you had a home internet thing. I like a wired connection. There's the sort of geek thing. Obviously it's part of my work. And so I wouldn't want to depend on wireless, but a lot of places like rural places, you know, they mentioned the universal, the Lifeline program. There's a lot of places where it's easier to get a cellular signal and get some kind of internet that way than it actually is to get a wire to your house that has any kind of speed. And, you know, you also get the cell phone that you can use and it gets better. You know, when you go into town or when you're closer to the cell tower, you can get the sort of full LTE and so on. So just an interesting change, you know, that it'll be, you know, right now. So 20% are using the phone alone, and it'll be interesting to watch and see if that number, if that keeps increasing, you know, maybe cord cutting goes first, you cut your cable and then you cut your internet wire, at least for a lot of people. So we'll watch that one. And then, other changes, you know, that some of its business model changes. This one's just sort of just a random business model change. Uber has pulled the plug on instant delivery in New York City. It had a food, it would deliver lunch. The Uber Eats feature, which had preset lunch items to be delivered in 10 minutes or less, had been available to people in the Big Apple since last year. But as of this week, that's no longer the case. Essentially, they're moving away from that particular service. And at least in New York, so if something, you know, is present, if Uber Eats is somewhere somewhere near you, you can probably still get it. But if you're in New York, it's not going to work. They changed their model, so you can get them to take you to lunch, but you can't get them to take lunch to you. So just something for you to know. And finally, this one, technology. Sometimes technology makes things better and is cool and great. And sometimes it replaces something and it opens up a world of dystopia and disease. And in this case, you know, the like expensive, those Dyson Airblade, the hand dryers. apparently, somebody did a study, you know, that researchers have, you know, have long known that warm air hand dryers can launch bacteria in the air, you know, compared to, you know, drying your hands with paper towels, which pretty much doesn't release any bacteria in the air. But the new jet air dryers made by Dyson are significantly more problematic. They launch far more viruses into the air, which linger for longer periods of time and reach much farther distances, as reported in the Journal of Applied Microbiology. This is particularly concerning because viruses, unlike many infectious bacteria, can easily maintain their infectiousness in the air and on surfaces, and just a few viral particles can spark an infection. So it's not, you know, unlike bacteria. So essentially, that awesome, trendy restroom that they've got at your.com with the cool Dyson, hand dryers, apparently that can spread viruses. So this winter, you could be spreading viruses all over the place when you think you're drying your hands after washing them and being a good, you know, good citizen. For the study, they compared the viral explosions from paper towels, a standard warm hand dryer, and a Dyson Airblade. They had two participants slather their gloved hands with a virus called MS2, which infects only bacteria but is a model for the spread of non-enveloped human viruses like norovirus. The resulting viral coating was in the realm of the amount of virus shed by people with like severe stomach bugs, like norovirus and rotavirus, and the amount of viral particles that might stick to dirty paws, like animal paws, the authors argue. So then they dried their hands with one of the free methods, while the researchers took air samples and captured viruses on plates set up at various places in the bathroom. So, you know, long story short, they set up plates at 6 different heights. They also set them at 9 places around the bathroom from 0 to 3 meters. And by far the jet dryer spread virus in all measurements. Let's see, clumping the data from all 6 heights together, you know, on a person, you know, where they set them up at different heights next to the drying sources. The Dyson produced 60 times more than the warm air dryer and 1,300 times more than paper towels. The viruses launched by the jet dryer, 70% were at the height of a small child's face. So there's that. There's a nice image for you when you're using that cool Dyson hand dryer. In response to Ars Technica, where I found this article, Dyson accused the authors of scaremongering with the study. That it had been conducted under artificial conditions using unrealistically high levels of virus contamination on unwashed gloved hands. But I think you can make your own decision about if you think that that's, you know, if you think that's legit or if you're maybe concerned about. So apparently the little known fourth item on the warm hair, hot air hair dryer or hand dryer pad where people, you know, scratch in, wipe hands on pants. I'm guessing that spreads viruses more like the paper towels as opposed to the spray of zombie infection that comes from a Dyson hand dryer. And that's the news.
All right, just in time for
8:30, so we can kind of go.
So we can watch for Pete to cut out, or we can just pretend it never happens.
That's right. Well, or just fill in, and I'll step back in once it's over. Once the flood of the flood of lack of internet connectivity.
The flood of silence.
Minute 45 seconds.
All right, we're coming up on the cutout time.
It's like going behind the dark side of the moon, you know, for the Apollo missions.
Yes, then are we receiving?
We should sniff the network sometime when that happens.
90 seconds.
Houston, we have a problem.
Houston, this is Odyssey. Good to see you.
So,
all right.
Anyways.
Packets, go.
So does it,
router, go.
All right, we're going to use the things that we have in the studio here to rebuild Pete's remote studio in miniature to see if we can figure out a way to get him through the next 30 seconds.
Should I turn off, like, my air conditioner and fans so conditions will match?
I can't get to the same network segment that Pete's on, can I?
Probably not.
No, I can sniff the wireless and I can't
see
anything past
the wireless.
Maybe if
you wired in over...
No connector.
It's too late now.
Next week.
40 seconds.
Should that be happening right now?
This is radio drama.
I think
it's
it happens
32,
at 32.
Yeah.
Pete, give us an audio stream.
So.
Can you just, like, sing a song? Maybe the Battle of New Orleans. 1814, we took a little trip.
Along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi.
Now, there's a lot of feedback.
We took a little bacon and we took a little beans.
And I don't remember the rest. I don't know the rest of that line. And we fired our guns.
I thought you were going to act like you were cutting out.
I get that.
No, we're now at the 28-second mark.
28 seconds to go. We're testing a theory. This is stress testing, or what do we call this?
Yeah, when Pete comes in from San Antonio, he drops out almost to the second at 8:32:32. We are now at 8:32:20.
So 21. We'll see. I guess I'll keep talking while it goes, and we can see if it happens at exactly the same second or not.
Keep going. No hijinks. Switching hours approaching.
I don't know.
I just kept singing.
We're in the clear.
We're at 8:32 and 39, so it didn't happen.
We can't be live.
And then we seem to have an explosion, and we're venting something out of the router.
So what we've proven is that it's the AC that's causing the problem. Because
yes,
the AC's
now
out.
The AC is not working.
By logic.
Complete and total sense.
Or that whatever device it is that's running... that's running that cron job somehow is affected by flooding or large amounts of moisture in the Houston metro area.
Maybe it's temperature based. Maybe it's when the thermostat kicks in.
If we're going to continue to have AC problems with high temperatures, I'm going to stop sniffing over here. That's not going to work out.
It's like speed, but with temperatures. As the temperature falls below 85 degrees in the studio.
You got to see some serious perspiration.
They'll be glowing.
All right. Well, so now that we did not lose Pete and we have the perfect show going on, I suppose we could do a segment. Or did you have something you wanted to say, Ben?
Yeah. I look pensive.
You look pregnant with thought.
Does anybody use one of those Dyson hand dryers? Are they around in places that anybody on the show has dealt with?
Yeah, they've kind of taken over. And that seems like the more green thing to do. So I've been over there just, you know, viral bombing myself.
I don't like those as much as the accelerator, the like super high stream.
I like the ones that shoot air both inside to where you put your hands down in the center. Is that the one you're talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Those are the good ones.
Those are
like
the Dyson
Never
Blade.
Mistake one of those for a urinal. God, the new urinal.
Well, apparently with the spreading power of the Dyson, you don't want to mistake that one either.
No, but the Dyson Blade is the one that you put your hands down and
yeah,
then,
that's what I thought. Yeah.
I don't like those as much.
Why?
I don't it, like. I feel like it takes longer. No, it takes longer, and I have to like go through it like several times. Whereas the accelerator, you know, is just one blast straight down, like super high speed air, and I just kind of put my hands under it and kind of rub them gently, as it suggests, and they dry faster and better, and it doesn't stop until it's, you know, my hands are dry.
No, I just pretend that I'm in a 1970s car wash with the machines that used to come over and blow all the water off the car. And
now all. You can pretend. Now you can pretend you're in a 70s dystopia and you're spreading
post-apocalyptic world.
It's the Andromeda Strain.
That's, I was trying to think of that movie. I couldn't remember the name. Andromeda Strain. Yeah. A specific movie I was trying to think
the
of.
The old 70s one, not the remake that kind of sucked. The 70s one actually is still pretty decent if you when you get past the kind of 70s sci-fi look and feel of it. The new one, though, was lame. Just my personal opinion.
So how old is Michael Crichton?
How dead is Michael Crichton?
Oh, is he? Okay. Oops.
Yeah, he died a few years ago. I think.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oops.
But sorry, but Michael. I do believe they preserved his blood and mosquitoes in amber, if I'm not mistaken.
Sense.
And in several thousand years, they'll
resurrect him to make a new bad movie.
Yeah, and they're going to cross him with a velociraptor and make a whole series of movies. Yeah, he died in 2008. Unfortunately for him. But
Katie Five was helping take care of you, and he actually posted the next line to the Battle of New Orleans. IRC.
Support from IRC.
There you go. See, that's one of those things that kids nowadays are never going to experience, because they can always look up the next line on their phone or somebody can. So those moments, those arguments, they're going to save so much time.
Can't be resolved.
Those arguments that you can't resolve because basically two different people remember differently what the answer is, and you know, nobody knows where, other than if there's a library nearby, you don't know anywhere to go to, you know, to confirm the answer.
You can't have the agree to disagree anymore.
Although there are different calibers of lyrics out there, lyric sources. Like, some are pretty bad. I've seen some really butchered translations out there. Lyric, is it Rap Genius or Lyric Genius or something, is actually pretty good. There are different ones out there, but there are, you know, I don't think it was like, excuse me while I kiss this guy, the Jimi Hendrix song.
What's really bad is when you find incorrect lyrics, and you know they're incorrect, and you can search on those incorrect lyrics and see all the lyric sites that have scraped from.
Yeah, it gets out once.
Well, a lot of them scrape.
A lot of them do scrape.
Yeah, definitely.
So you can't count on the authenticity of them at all.
I actually found a site a few days ago that it was taking ones like misheard lyrics, and they were selling like stainless steel pint glasses that had the misheard lyrics
on
them.
You put that out there. I saw that in the wild. That wasn't you?
Maybe it was you. I don't remember where I saw it. It was maybe on Facebook.
I might have retweeted it or passed
Jim
it along.
Jim Thompson or Dave Thomas or someone.
No, it was Jim Thompson. I'll bet you it was Jim Thompson, yeah.
I don't know.
There was a website, and I wish I could find it again. I can't remember what it was called, but you could play a song, like a YouTube video or something with music in it, and it would give you the chord progressions.
I never saw that.
Cool.
And I can't remember what it was called, but it was very cool. I put some of my music through there to see if it was getting.
How many notes you got wrong?
No.
So does it reverse engineer the song? Does it come back and give you what it actually was for the most part? Like, does it give you like, hey, A, G?
Does it give you a
does
grade?
Correctly,
like
correctly
identifies the song. Like, I put a song that I knew that I played, I knew the chord progression, and I, you know, I watched it go through it. It was very accurate.
It was like, this is a song that was written by somebody who's been doing music for 4 months.
No, it was all correct. It was open G, open G, open G.
E, 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 E. This is written on a guitar. E.
I call that the song to my door code.
nice.
All right.
I do like coming into the studio where I get trolled in person.
It's like being, it's like a live comment section.
Yeah, it's a higher caliber of trolling because, you know, people have to stand behind us. None of this anonymous stuff.
None of us have perfect pitch, right?
Oh, no. Speak for yourself.
I'm just saying.
No.
I'm and speak for me.
Cuz I don't.
He's in a band.
I don't have perfect pitch though.
I have what they call perfect auto-tune.
Perfect pitch. I would think that would be kind of annoying. I mean, it's cool that people can do that, but I would think it would be annoying at times.
Like perfection's annoying, or like, what do you mean?
Yeah, but well, because like you hear a bird chirp, and you're like, oh, B flat.
Oh, you mean okay? You mean being able to hear, not
perfect,
being able to produce
perfect pitch? Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's pitch, not perfect pitch.
Perfect. Yeah.
Not have, perfect pitch was being able to sing directly.
It,
yeah.
No, but you have
key.
To hear it to do it. But perfect pitch, my understanding, of perfect pitch is you can hear sounds and you know what note or even chords. Like,
hold on, at Nolan Ryan on Twitter no, says it, that's not the perfect pitch.
No,
right.
Absolute pitch, widely referred to as perfect pitch, is a rare auditory phenomenon characterized by the ability of a person to identify or recreate a given musical note without the benefit of a reference
tone.
Go flicked.
Yeah. Now, so I had a music teacher.
So no reference tone.
No, that's not the ability to hear it and then reproduce it. It's the ability, if I said A flat, then the perfect pitch person could do, you know, make
but it
an
said
A-flat.
To hear it. Reread the first half
hear
of that.
Hear or
again.
Reproduce. Detect or
to
reproduce.
To hear it. So basically.
To identify.
Yes, exactly.
Or recreate.
To identify
a given
it, you have
musical
to hear
note
it.
Without the benefit of reference
yes.
tone.
Well, yeah, you don't have a reference tone, so you can't say, here, I'm going to play a C on this tuner.
Here's a 2600 megahertz
and then,
tone.
And then from that C, you can like bounce off of that and say, oh, this is this many notes up or down. Like, so I had a piano teacher, and she didn't have, but her daughter did. And she would say, like, you know, she's riding in a car with her daughter, and like somebody would honk their horn, and she would know, like, oh, that's B flat and a G.
You know, so this is probably just you could probably just say that.
That's B flat.
That's B flat. Yeah.
Especially when you know that the other person doesn't have actually they've done studies and you know how there's the like the Asian kids who are like violin virtuosos and stuff like that. Like Chinese children. Yeah, because saying they're good at it.
Just say kids.
You know,
there's some kids out there, prodigies.
No, well no, but the thing is there actually are the studies in China. The language is pitch based, so like rising pitch and all that kind of stuff. What pitch?
So their brains
you
are wired
the words
to hear pitch
at,
better,
right? And you're so to and the words mean something different if you say it with a different pitch. And the number of kids who have perfect pitch is dramatically the percentage is dramatically higher than they are, say, of English that compared to English speaking children because we pitch isn't critical to the
isn't
tone. Now it gives tone to what you're saying.
It's a tonal language, yeah.
So it's sarcasm and stuff, but the Chinese one, the pitch is important.
But the word doesn't change in English. The meaning might change, but the word itself doesn't change.
Flicked against this, like in Russian, there's a touch of that. You know, a question, a statement is really only determined by if you sound depressed or if you sound like you don't believe yourself. You know, if you're like, at déjà vu, and they're like, at déjà vu.
It's still not tonal language,
though.
That's nuance.
It's emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Syllable.
But yeah, I could see that. I mean, if you speak a tonal language, your brain is going to be wired to hear tones more.
I saw a study that said that indicated or set out to prove or suggest that babies cry in the accent of their parents or their native language.
Hmm.
And they demonstrated this by saying, you know, they said that they, through studying it, that German babies cried in a certain pattern, you know, where it was went up, or and then like Swedish babies cried in a more musical, you know, lilting way.
Is that after having been exposed to their parents in another language? Because surely you can't separate a baby till it cries.
No, apparently that they even hear this inflection while they're in the womb.
Okay, so it's based on experience.
It's based
it's
on
not like a
no,
hard
no, no,
wire.
It's not a hard wire. Okay. It's based on the experience that they hear the language when they're in the womb from people talking in the room and they get a sense of
Plus, in the womb, it probably sounds like everybody's crying because it's going through all the fluid and stuff.
I'm on an episode of the Peanuts.
Peanuts reruns, yeah.
Maybe that's why the Peanuts did so well when I was a kid. Because it wasn't, I mean, so, arguably, I'm not going to say it wasn't
soothing.
A great cartoon, but it was very like, yeah, the teacher's voice is just like, oh.
Well, that's
it's pretty much how kids hear adults.
The perfect pitch is interesting, though, because just like, you know, if we go with pasture pigeons or birds, migratory birds that can tell where north is, you know, they've looked and they've seen like, okay, there's a little piece of ferrous, something that's suspended, you know, near the brain. So there's got to be some kind of a clocking mechanism to be able to tell frequencies somewhere in the brain that's turned on or not turned on, or somewhere in the body for them to be able to do that without a reference tone, which is, that's interesting.
Well, a sort of related story that's been out this week, you may have seen it. It's been sort of viral. I'm sure the first viral thing from the Logopedics Phoniatrics Vocology publication. where a group of researchers studied Freddie Mercury's voice.
Oh, I did see that.
One thing they found is that despite being largely known as a tenor, he was more likely a baritone based on his speaking voice, the frequency of a speaking voice. The other thing they found is that he was like doing a whole lot more with his voice than most people. Even they brought in a professional rock singer and filmed his larynx at 4,000 frames per second to look at exactly how Freddie Mercury created like vibratos and stuff like that. And they discovered that he was likely employing subharmonics, which is a singing style where the ventricular folds of your vocal cords vibrate along with the vocal folds, which most humans other than two-vein throat singers don't use it. So it's like, so he was doing something way there's a reason why nobody else can really sound like Freddie Mercury when they do, you know, Queen's songs. And apparently like on a vibrato, a typical vibrato, a perfect sine wave for vibrato assumes the value of one, which is pretty close to where like somebody like Luciano Pavarotti would sing. His vibrato was sort of perfect. Mercury, on the other hand, averaged a value of 0.57, which means he was doing more, that it was a tighter vibration. The height of the sine wave was closer together. You know, the distance between the peaks, which means he was vibrating something in his throat that even Luciano Pavarotti could not do. So, kind of wild. I guess the other weird thing on replacing somebody is unless it turned out to be a fake, while we're doing voices and pitch and stuff, did any of you see the thing about about Axl Rose singing for AC/DC?
Oh, I did see that. It's been confirmed.
Are we no longer relevant now that we're talking about Axl Rose?
Or AC/DC.
I would say AC/DC is more relevant than Axl Rose. Maybe.
Well, apparently the thing, you know, that's sort of, you know, first off, the kind of like, really, he's going to, you know, obviously he doesn't sound like Bon Scott and he doesn't sound like their current singer, who now I've totally blanked on his name. But Brian Johnson. OK, I thought you said Ron Johnson. I'm like, yeah, you're pulling my leg. I know it's not. You know, Axl Rose doesn't sound like either of them, but apparently what he's going to do is he's going to sing with, it's on there. They're on a tour. I guess it's the Coachella thing or something. And they're on some kind of tour, and he's going to sing for both. It's going to be Guns N' Roses and he's going to sing for AC/DC. That's kind of like, that's pretty hardcore. I just would wonder what happens by the end of the night on that one. I guess especially if you tried to sing like Brian Johnson, because I think that's pretty that seems like that would just that'd be like sandpaper on your vocal cords after a while. Anyway, just interesting science stuff about voices.
Speaking of voices, Pete, do we have a TV on in the background somewhere? We're getting reports of either a whole lot of feedback or Some TV
think
bleeding
TV.
Can we squelch that?
Sounds like a TV.
Yeah.
I'm going to play the bumper for the next thing and see if I can remedy the TV.
Without knowing FCC rebroadcast rules. Yeah. Magnum PI, brought to you by Technology Bites.
Yeah, no, it's not broadcast television. We're cord cutters, and my kids don't watch regular TV. So.
Frozen, brought to you by Technology Bites.
All
this
right,
YouTube
well, here
channel?
We'll
PewDiePie.
Play this intro, and I'll take care of the other part.
Bite.
Okay, hopefully that solves it.
No, it didn't.
Okay, sorry, one dude. Second.
We interrupt this broadcast.
The call is coming.
You
have to put your finger to your mouth and go shh, shh, shh. You can't just put your finger to your mouth.
No. You got to give the loud shushing noise.
Yes.
Which doesn't work on my parrots anymore.
Parrots?
Parrots.
Parrots.
Birds.
Gotcha.
Parrots.
Frog insurance.
Jeez.
What?
Apparently the TV was so loud that they
couldn't hear you telling them to turn it down.
They couldn't
hear Turn it down!
It was meddling
even
kids.
Even as the vocabulary that I used to to encourage them to do that evolved, that didn't work either. So I closed the door and I think
there you go.
Well, Pete, your happy tree friend's mix up was recognized elsewhere.
Put a little towel underneath the door.
Was recognized.
It was recognized without the aid of us telling someone what that was. So I think that's the first time that's happened since you had that in play.
Awesome. Well, that's the Apple rumors part, and the thing that happened this week is Apple did announce one decent upgrade and one not even hardly worth announcing upgrade. The MacBook, just MacBook, no Pro. Retina display, no whatever, no Air. The regular MacBook has now got the Skylake processor.
I was hoping maybe you're going to say they released a Honeycrisp instead of a Macintosh.
Nope, they put a Skylake processor. It's the next generation 12-inch Retina MacBook. It is a faster processor. It's 15 to 18% faster than the prior MacBook.
Looks just like the Air.
And it still looks exactly like the prior MacBook. The things that they didn't do are kind of the bigger story than the things they did do. They stayed with the USB 3. Whatever the single port, and the thing that people had thought they were going to do this time because of Apple's commitment to Thunderbolt and all of that is there is a Thunderbolt 3 that's much faster and uses the same form factor as the USB C connector, and they didn't do it, the USB C port. And they didn't go to DDR4 RAM, which was the other thing that people thought might be happening. So the big thing, it does on the plus side, it's 15 to 18% faster than it was, and which is kind of like if your Prius is 15 to 18% faster than it was, not dramatic, not neck snapping. They didn't take it and turn it into a Tesla Model S. But the battery life, it's got another hour of battery life. On one of the sites they had, one of the sites linked from the Geek Radio webpage, because on the front page we have links to all the articles used on the different segments during the show. They show the inside of the new MacBook, and it's just about all battery. There's a little board that's, I don't know, looks like it's about 4 inches by 2 inches or 5 inches by 2 inches. And there's the touchpad and the rest of its battery.
It's still fanless, too. I didn't realize that. So no loud fan noises, nothing spinning
out. So it is quite the big appeals to it are it's very thin and light, and it's got decent speed. And it has a long battery life, and it has that great screen. It's got that Retina screen, so that you do get more screen real estate than you do on a MacBook Air, even a 13-inch, even one with a larger screen. It's got more pixels to it. Obviously, a side effect of that is the last year MacBooks are, they lowered the price for the refurbs, so they started about $930. And go up to about 1300. You can order these with a better processor that's faster. There's some build to order choices. And then the other announcement they made, they added rose gold. So if you just have to have an ultra thin notebook that matches your phone and your watch that you got in rose gold, now you can finally do that without having to do special.
My display isn't defective. That actually is rose gold we're looking at.
It'll be popular in tonal-speaking countries.
Yes.
And then the other thing they announced is that and this one, for some people, may be a bigger deal, actually, even though it's not that big a deal. No changes in the processors on any of the other MacBooks. But the MacBook Air 13-inch now has 8 gigs of RAM standard on all of them. So before it maxed out at 4 gigs, I believe, and now you can get 8 gigs, and now it has 8 gigs on all of them. So it's kind of, you know, I don't know what they're, we've talked about this in the past. I don't know where they're going with this, because it's kind of, you know, the MacBook is interesting, but they're not doing things that make you feel like this is really the future direction that they're really betting on. It's sort of a sideline. It kind of is the Apple Watch of MacBooks, of all the different MacBooks, where you kind of go, well, you know, if you have some very specific needs, it can meet those, but it's not really for power users, and it's not aimed at the normal Apple audiences. So it says it has 10 hours of battery life, and that it can do, I think, like 30 days on standby. So there's that. And I guess before we go, last thing is there's rumors that Apple's going to go from aluminum to all glass for the iPhone 7.
All glass. All right. Well, that music's telling us we need to take a short break and deal with some station business. So we're going to take a short break and deal with some station business.
All glass.
All glass.
Transparent all aluminum.
All glass all the time.
See, that way when you break it, you can just stuff it in a very small envelope to send it back to Apple.
No more hope of just dropping it on the non-face side. All right. Well, we'll be back after this business. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Rufus.
Yes, he is.
KPFT's Spring Fun Drive is coming up, and we need your support to make it a success. In May, we'll be bringing you some of our best programming to remind you why community radio matters. And your pre-pledge today can help shorten this campaign. That's right. You can make our spring shorter by donating this hour at kpft.org. And if you or your business or organization wants to make a bigger donation, you can turn that into a match or challenge pledge to encourage others to give. Just email Development Director Robin Lewis at robin@kpft.org for more information. Again, our spring marathon is near. Please help today at kpft.org. Thanks. This is KPFT Houston.
Se movilizará desde el salar ardiente y mineral. Thousands of you have heeded the call, but there's always room for more. You can find KPFT on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. From our latest updates to funny videos, contests, news, and more, you can find us anytime, day or night. We're at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We'd love to give you the latest. Plus, you're already on Facebook. Why not get behind the scenes of Houston's leader for independent music, arts, ideas, and culture right now? Again, find us at KPFT Houston on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. See you there.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. We now return to Technology Bites and... Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. Hey, Edwino. And that's that for Barrett time.
Oh, God.
I know.
Really?
Weak sauce. I didn't have time to do it. We're in emergency operations. And Flicted showed me a Arduino, which is super cool. So I figured we're golden.
I did say he could do Barrett time and mention it. So technically, he did do what I suggested.
Yeah, it's that going above and beyond that really distinguishes Barrett time.
We do raise the bar here at Technology Bites.
Okay, well, I guess circling back to the glass iPhone.
Circling back down the drain.
Transparent aluminum. That does sound like a Star Trek thing.
It's Ming-Chi Kuo from KGI Securities, who tends to do fairly okay on predicting stuff. Apparently, the deal is Apple's really looking seriously at a major redesign for the iPhone 7 because everybody else has the aluminum type enclosure, and so that's why he believes that they'll be moving to an all glass enclosure, dropping aluminum completely, as it will, quote, no longer appear modern or fresh in 2017. The 4 and 4S, the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 4S were glass, but the outer edge there was a stainless steel band around the outside. Some of it may be that, you know, they're going to get an AMOLED. The rumor is that they'll get an AMOLED display panel, which is thinner and lighter, which would compensate for the slight weight increase that you would get with glass compared to metal.
But how would you do all glass? Because you use glass screws and you use...
I don't know. Maybe it'll all just be glued together.
I mean, you know, technically silicone is glass, but...
That just sounds like it would shatter, like the glass sword. Like you could make one phone call and that's it.
You know, the leaks so far have shown something that looks pretty much like the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus. So it may be that'll be sort of the size. But I wonder if maybe part of it is it's so early that there's a lot more opportunity for Apple to be experimenting with, you know, with just kind of throw out the rules and see what they can come up with, as opposed to necessarily this being the direction. That would make sense if he's caught the, that Apple's wanting a new something that really will blow people away, that'll be new and different and not the same as every other phone manufacturer, but...
Maybe recycled plastic or compost.
Ew. Wasn't someone making a cardboard phone for a while?
Nice.
Like a disposable phone? I know we talked about that. It's probably been a handful.
I think a lot of
years.
Children have had cardboard phones.
Cardboard phones. They told me it was real.
Yeah. So anyway, so there's that, and we'll keep an eye on the different rumors. Of course, you know, the tough part is the rumors are interesting, but then when it turns out that sometimes when it turns out they're right, and then the announcement comes, and it's kind of like, yeah, we already knew that. What are you going to do to surprise us? So I don't know, take some of the fun out of it.
Maybe it was grass and not glass.
Oh, that, so we've gotten our first 420 reference in for the show. tonight, that, you know, for those of you who are listening to it broadcast live, it's, it is April the 20th, if you're of that kind of...
don't forget to bring a towel. It's a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy reference, of course, not...
Not South Park?
No.
Isn't I don't know what Al Day, South Park Mother is. Day?
Jay's not here. I did have a support call come in today from a coworker whose name is Tom Chong.
No, you didn't.
Yes, he did.
I totally did.
Was it a real tech support call?
It was a real tech support call. The guy's real name was Tom Chong.
So it wasn't an electronic ticket. It was someone on the phone.
No, it was an electronic
ticket.
Okay, it was
an electronic ticket. Okay. So that point, that could border on prank call. I would be suspect.
No, because the ticketing system's tied to your user ID, so it pulls up all your information.
Okay.
It's not half baked.
Okay. Well, you guys aren't messing around.
It's
here.
Fully baked.
Were you eating your own dog food?
No. Thank God. I mean, really.
All right. Well, I guess we should – maybe we'll go to the next segment, and this one will just – I think that especially since we've got an hour left of the show and we need to fill it, then we'll do – we can do one article at a time or one item at a time and then discuss it and then move on to the next.
Ooh, one thing at a time.
I'll throw something here just for a minute. So I got a new job about 6 months ago, and I have to ride an elevator now that I never had to ride an elevator for my previous jobs. And in this elevator, there's one of those screen systems, and it shows the weather and the news and tidbits of things and talks about how, you know, 60% of people talk about this and follow up on it, and I don't believe that, but whatever. But the thing is, every once in a while, it puts up, like, management tips that it's, like, culled from certain Twitter accounts or whatever. And whenever those things pop up, it's like, wow, like these are real people, I guess, that are really tweeting these management tips. And I guess other managers read it and go, well, I don't know what they would say because I don't speak manager speak. But every time those things come up, I'm like, wow, they strung as many buzzwords together as they possibly could. Like, who in the world would care about any of this except another manager?
Managers always say, wow, that's a really good manager quote.
Yeah, and it talks about, like, if you want to inspire your employees, and it just says a bunch of gobbledygook, and, my immediate response is, yeah, if you want to talk to your employees, like, don't use these words. Like, don't talk like this.
Can you build an overlay for the screen?
Managers discover synergies in these quotes, and new efficiencies that can be gotten from going to an agile scrum type synergistic.
That whole scrum thing, that scrum, people use that word, I want to punch them.
We have 45-minute long scrum meetings now, which is not a scrum meeting.
And then you have a scrum master.
Yes. I've made.
We don't. I still.
Are you a certified Scrum Master?
I'm not going to get certified in that.
I have constructed multiple DLs that have sub DLs, nested DLs, all of which have the word Scrum in them. It is a Scrum of DLs.
I want to get my
distribution lists.
I want to get my SEO license first.
Now, speaking of SEO, there was a great line on Twitter. Somebody said some SEO. Convinced web designers to not put dates on anything, and now the internet is ruined. And it's true. Like, I go to find an article.
Because they don't want stuff dated. Yeah, you're right. I can't tell the freshness of an article. Right. SEO is just search engine optimization. Yeah. So it's people, they're borderline snake oil salesmen that come around and say, you want hits? I got hits.
I'll get you in the top five in Google, guaranteed.
I'll take you all the way, baby. Just ride with me.
Yeah, there's another phrase that really only bad managers say, which is, "Yeah, I want to be number one on the front page of Google, or at least in the top 10." And you say, "Well, what is it? Why we sell beverages?" And it's like, "Oh yeah, because you're going to be able to beat Pepsi, Coke,
Mountain
beer."
Dew.
Wine, every other beverage that has a billion-dollar budget.
Clearly Canadian.
And
clearly.
We'll get,
clearly Canadian's coming back.
Is it?
I saw an article last week or the week before. It said Clearly Canadian is coming back. And I was like, wow, I hadn't even thought of Clearly Canadian since the 80s.
Circa 1988.
Yeah. But yeah, they're coming back.
What's
Man,
next?
I loved them back
chocolate
then.
Chocolate fudge cola that was out. I guess that's still around, actually. If you
chocolate
like
soldier?
Isn't no, there was called... one that was a fudge that tasted like fudge.
Oh. I don't think I had that
I
one.
Apparently was missing out.
Which got a real, it was a very odd experience because it obviously had the texture of cola. But
I mean, I like Yahoo.
Like chocolate. No, it was like a Coke that tasted like chocolate fudge.
So hold on. Clearly Canadian made drinks that weren't clear? That seems like anti-mission
no,
statement.
No, no, no. I think he's talking about something else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, so, I think all the Clearly Canadian drinks were all clear.
Yeah,
they had
all
different
clear
flavors, though.
Yes.
Yeah, but evidently, and they're coming back, and they had the bottle looked like the original bottle, assuming that wasn't just an old picture.
I did notice Dublin Dr. Pepper has popped up in plastic. Have you seen this?
Well, there's no such thing as Dublin Dr.
I know.
Dr.
It's,
Pepper
is it owned by some large, ugly corporation now?
Well, what happened was that the Dublin plant had been was the oldest Dr. Pepper bottling plant in the world, because they were one of the first ones to license it or whatever. They were the only ones that had been continually doing it and had used cane sugar, you know, in the 70s or whenever. Every other place went to corn syrup except this one. They were the only ones that didn't. So they're the only people that had been using pure cane sugar, and they kind of got a name for that. But the thing is, kind of like car dealerships or whatever, they split up the bottling plants. They split up the counties for distribution. And so they could only distribute within their 5-county radius or whatever that they had forever.
I would road trip for that.
But the
though.
Thing is, they had branded themselves as Dublin Dr. Pepper, and it had become very popular. And Dr. Pepper, as a corporation, had never said anything. Well, suddenly they got super popular, and everybody was wanting Dublin Dr. Pepper instead of just pure cane sugar Dr. Pepper. And so people were buying syrup from them and having it shipped and all kinds of stuff. And eventually, I think probably enough other Dr. Pepper bottling companies said, man, those Dublin people, they're screwing us out of money because people are buying their stuff instead of our cane sugar Dr. Pepper because they
the
want
pepper
Dublin.
Cartel.
And so eventually the Dr. Pepper corporate said, you can't use the name Dublin on your stuff. And they fought them and then eventually had to capitulate in court. And Dr. Pepper basically took their right away to make Dr. Pepper. So
they basically bought them out. They gave them like $5 million and bought their license back from them.
So Dublin Dr. Pepper does not exist anymore. Now, the guy who owned it probably took that money and he started Dublin Bottling Works or Bottle Works. So I think he makes a Dr. Pepper clone style call. I forgot what it's called. But he makes a bunch of others. So, like, actually at my wedding, all the bottles on the table were all Dublin Bottle Works.
I've seen that around. But
who did Dublin Dr. Pepper.
In my local convenience store that also gets a lot of, like, off-brand candies and things that probably aren't legal to sell in the U.S., there was a plastic thing that said Dr. Pepper, and it had the old label with the, you know, the three times is, like, 11.
No, other people, once... there started to get backlash against against corn syrup. Mm-hmm. And Dublin Dr. Pepper got popular for using pure cane sugar.
So
other bottling
design.
Places started using what they'd call like throwback Dr. Pepper or classic Dr. Pepper or different things. But they almost always were bottles, but it was pure cane sugar Dr. Pepper. But it was other bottling Dr. Pepper bottling places that did it. I didn't know that they had started putting it in plastic bottles, but I take that back.
I
have seen them in like 16-ounce plastic bottles.
The interesting thing on the stuff from Dublin that they do currently is it has a really good burn when most of them. They put phosphoric acid is what, if you look at the ingredients, because there aren't that many ingredients.
Is that really what does it? Because it does have a kick, but I had no idea it was phosphoric acid.
It has
acid.
That kind of old school. The people who are old enough will remember this. Coca-Cola used to have a real burn when you drank it. And
it still has
a
burn compared to other sodas.
But not like it used to, though. I know. I remember I may have told this story on the year before, but you know, when New Coke came out and the old Coke, it was in cans. What was kind of left was in cans with a gold top. And then when the New Coke came out, it had a silver top. and they went on with that. And about 6 months after Old Coke had stopped being sold anymore, and when the supplies had pretty much run out anywhere, you couldn't get it at stores or any of that. I was at a gathering in our neighborhood at one of the neighbors, and it was a couple who didn't have any kids, and you know, they had a wet bar in their house, and you know, so it was a neat gathering place. And I was over there, I was back from college, and so I went to get something to drink, and I didn't want booze or a beer, and I opened up their little mini fridge, and there was one Coke with a gold top on it, and I was on that, like, I grabbed that thing so fast, and I savored every drop of it, because that was the last real, honest-to-gosh, classic Coke.
Well, new Coke was pretty horrible. I mean, it really.
And then the Coke Classic is different. They reformulated that when they.
It was a lot
back,
more. New Coke was pretty much like Pepsi. Like it was syrupy, sweet, mm-hmm. not fizzy like regular Coke.
According to one book, it literally was Diet Coke with high fructose corn syrup instead of fake sweetener.
This one time,
that was the formula, as opposed to them figuring out, you know, like coming up with some new formula, that, and they thought that was going to be the big hit, and it was one of the biggest business failures of the late 20th century.
I was driving through Houston and I found the beverage show.
Yeah, well, stop and get a Dublin whatever, because like
show
the root
makes
beer,
me thirsty.
Yes,
the root beer is really good, and then they picked up a lot of old flavors like grape.
Yeah, they have a Texas root beer that with two X's.
That's excellent.
I really like their Frou Frou Berry, which is kind of a purplish color. their blue cream soda's good. Their cherry limeade's good.
Yeah, I want a soda now. We can't.
And a cherry cola,
this.
I think too. That's good.
They have a lemonade soda. They have a grapefruit soda.
Although the thing to warn people on is, it's not cheap per bottle. This is premium stuff, and so it's like $1.50 or $1.70 a bottle. So you know that, which means it's more special occasion kind of stuff. If you're, you know, if you're in Texas and you want to do cheap with cane sugar, HEB has the like cans of their cane sugar stuff. If you look, you can find it, and it's decent. While we're doing our various cola stories, all right. Well, why don't we bump another segment, since we could have talked about, we could have had the cola thing as part of. Segment.
Now, there is a beverage cooling contest coming up at DEF CON if you have not yet made your plans to go to Vegas. So do that soon.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip in the snark tank?
So the first thing is Mr. Robot Season 2 hits the USA Network on
yesterday,
July the 13th.
For real this time? This is
you
legit.
Can go click the link, go to geekradio.com,
I've been
click
afraid.
The link, confirm it. It's not, I'm not Rickrolling everybody. I won't do that with the news. Yeah, everybody's favorite paranoid hacker Dreamboat returns to type furiously and maybe destroy capitalism. In Season 2 of Mr. Robot,
hold the
premiering
phone.
On USA July 13th.
Hacker Dreamboat?
I've never heard him referred to as a Dreamboat.
Yeah, this
what
just
Gadget says.
Are they going to go all romantical on Season 2?
I don't know. They have new cast members, including Craig Robinson of The Office.
And Pauly Shore.
Rapper Joey Bad A double dollar sign. I don't know how you pronounce that. It says if you missed out on the show last year, now's the time to catch up, if only to appreciate its very realistic portrayal of hacking. So there's one to, I think, to try, and you probably should see if you can. I don't know. Are there places where you can binge watch the first season? I'm.
There should be. We should talk to maybe like TXRX Labs
or
Hackerspace.
Have they released it on DVD?
No, but it is a hacker movie. I don't think that.
I'm just wondering if they've released it for to purchase season one.
Let's go see.
Because I was gonna buy it probably, just so I had it.
So, I don't know if it's available. You know, that would be a good one to get on Netflix or Hulu or somewhere for them.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did a catch-up, you know, leading up to the new season, like in the week before. Yeah, a lot of stations do that.
We're getting some off-air help, and it says that, yeah, Amazon carries the DVD for Mr. Robot.
I wonder if they put out any special edition ones or if it's just a standard.
Surely there would be. I wouldn't mind seeing a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff and, you know, getting, like, you know, for instance, like the stories behind when they used the RFID stuff and they actually, you know, called the next version Mr. Robot and a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. I wouldn't mind seeing, I guess, the consulting on the tech side, because like we've mentioned before, this is one of the most realistic hacker slash, you know, computer tech show I've seen, period.
Well, there is, Barrett, for you, you know, while you're waiting, there is a musical version from Styx.
See, now this is where I just can't trust you guys anymore. I trust no one.
And some of it's in Japanese, so you got to kind of translate it.
Yeah, but that's referencing the White Rose.
Help me out.
Wasn't that the name, White Rose?
Oh,
Orgato, Mr.
Oh, yes,
Robata.
Yes, yes.
That was the Kilroy was here.
I just caught up.
Welcome to the show, Jay.
Jay's not here, man.
All right. Well, here's a device. Here's one for try, buy, or fry. You know, if you dodged a bullet on this current rain thing, remember, once Houston dries out from the current deal, then it's hurricane season, frankly. And so here's something that may be worthwhile. You know, your average smartphone has about, 2,500 milliamp hours of power. There's a new mobile charger from Anker called the Powerhouse. It's about the size of a cinder block. And it boasts 120,600 milliamp hours. You can use it to recharge your phone for up to 40 days straight if your power's out that long. It has four USB ports on the front. There's a 12-volt DC outlet for powering gadgets designed for your car and a standard three-prong outlet for powering anything that plugs into a wall.
And it weighs 150 pounds.
The Powerhouse can recharge a laptop 15 times or even keep a mini fridge running for up to 7 hours.
Yes, we need this.
When the Powerhouse eventually dies, it can be fully recharged in about 10 hours using its included charger, which you plug into the wall. And instead of providing, instead of four little glowing dots that give you the estimate on remaining charge, a large LCD display provides a far more accurate prediction of how much time you have left. It's about $500. So basically, think of this as an electric version of a low-end, like, gas generator.
We may not need that as badly as we once thought. That's pretty pricey.
There's also a solar charger that's coming for the Powerhouse that can bring it back to full in about 16 hours. So it like I said, it's about the size of a cinder block. So obviously you're not gonna throw it in your backpack and take it around with you or bring it on a flight. But if you are going to really have that much withdrawal if you don't have things to power all your devices, it seems like this would be the one where you would not have to worry about keeping your laptop and your phones going for, you know, if power's out for a week. If you can recharge a laptop 15 times with it, that means that, you know, you could charge a phone and a laptop and handle stuff for about a week.
Did you see if that's like a LiPo battery, Pete, or do you know what kind of battery composition that's got?
They don't really say here. I'm betting it, obviously it's not for as much power as it has. It's not that big. So, I wonder what, I would guess lithium ion at least, if not, yeah, high density lithium ion, 400 watt hour power supply.
Ooh, and not that we should be promoting anything like this on the air, but it's the price you mentioned, it's actually quite a lot less if you go out and get them before they're officially out, I believe.
There is a lower price. I think it's about $100 less if you do the early ordering thing on it. But it weighs about 10 pounds. It sounds closer to 9 pounds. 9.3 pounds, it says. So That's not terrible. I mean, that's think about how many of those little carry around ones you'd have to get the kind of brute power that you can get with this one.
That would power everything through a long con weekend, I think. All your devices, all your laptops.
There you go. And you could put it like in the bottom of your suitcase and then just don't bring clothes, just bring power and devices and you're set.
That's what I usually do.
And then all you have to do is like find plugs every so often. You don't even need a hotel room. So you spend the money you would have spent on a hotel room to buy this and then just live out of your suitcase. Now, and it'd be good for camping too, you know, because, you know, when you get out in the middle of nowhere, you of course want to power, you want to charge your phone 40 times and charge a laptop.
In the great outdoors.
Make your microwave work so you can do s'mores and stuff, you know. Out in the
nature. Love the smell of packets in the morning.
Sniffing packets in the morning.
So there's that. So on a totally different, but you know, it does make sense. Obviously, going forward, maybe that's not the right device for people, but you do want to think about that. That is something that could be very useful for a power outage situation. Is to have some kind of backup power that you can plug your phone into at least. And get juiced up, because you know what happens when the storm comes or whatever. It never happens. Nobody ever says, "Hey, I just finished charging my phone," and then the lights go out. Right? It's always, "Hey, I better plug in my phone and charge it." And between charge and it, the lights go out. So it's worth a thought if you were kind of putting together your survival kit. And then this one isn't any part of a survival kit, but it might be kind of a cool geek thing, and apparently it's a lot better than most of the off-the-shelf options. It's a long article, so I'm just going to give you the low overview, but ours has a great article about making your own homebrew Linux router from scratch, and getting basically a lot better performance than you can from the stuff that you can, you know, go and buy in a store. So they take you through kind of step by step how to get the, they describe what the router does and how it works. They talk to you about the, like, what they used a dual gigabit NIC mini PC from Alibaba and an inexpensive SSD from Newegg. You know, your overall price is not that much. Obviously, you have to spend the time to make the thing. It sounds like the hardware is it's under $200 to do the hardware. And you might be able to build your own thing from scratch for less. But obviously, you want something that's got some good performance. And this one, it's a fanless dual NIC in a case and all that kind of stuff.
Is there Wi-Fi built in on this particular model, or is it just pure wired only?
It looks like it's wired only.
Okay, yeah. I know we mentioned like a couple weeks ago, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, that the FCC, at least in the U.S., was coming in saying, hey, if you're going to sell Wi-Fi routers, you can no longer allow or easily allow alternate firmware to be put on there because of the, I guess it's part 15 of the FCC stuff that says do not tamper with wireless products. So that's cool that you can do that. I'm always afraid that the ability to load, you know, other firmware on products will go away, but I hadn't really thought about having something with no wireless whatsoever, and that kind of, it seems like, flies under the radar on this whole thing.
Well, I think it would let you use, you know, if you wanted to hook it up to a regular Wi-Fi router as one of the, as some, you know, you use this to route your whole network. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you're not relying on the Wi-Fi router to do the fancy stuff that you usually, you know, kind of hack into a Wi-Fi router for. So the link is on the Geek Radio website that talks about kind of the whole thing, and gives you, you know, they go through and kind of talk about the options on, you know, different parts to it. And like I said, they go into the software and through all the steps. Frankly, if you haven't built a computer or haven't done some of this kind of stuff, you can, you know, it's worth doing once. And this one's a good one that you can play with and get use out of and get the experience. So if you've been in the mood to kind of play with some of this stuff, I highly recommend a project like this.
Yeah, this looks cool. It looks like this one goes beyond just installing like OpenWRT or DDWRT or pfSense, and it actually gets into installing Ubuntu on hardware. So it's not quite like Linux from scratch where you compile everything from the ground up, but it's pretty close. So honestly, I think if you were to do this, this is like the first step in being able to put Linux on whatever you want to. This today, you know, toasters in 2 weeks.
Yeah. And so you'd be ready for the next step in, we'll move on to the next thing. The next thing in smart devices, according to PC World, is going to be shoes and shirts, apparently. They said some clothes already hang out on the internet. Pharrell Williams' hat has its own Twitter account, and so does Mark Zuckerberg's hoodie. Your clothes could be next to get online identities. IoT startup Everything, I'm going to say every thong because I can't. Because if you're going to have a dippy dropping vowels thing, then people get to make up how to pronounce it too, if you can make up your own spelling.
Do you think we can get some try out Everythongs for the show? The next geek
IoT startup Everythong is teaming up with packaging company Avery Dennison to give apparel and footwear products unique identities in Everythong software right when they're manufactured.
I write the thongs that make
They don't want to make your clothes into online celebrities. They want to make them more useful. What they're doing may make it harder to counterfeit desirable products. So I guess there's that. Although, you know, I don't know if that helps you or not. It depends if you're like only buy the real brand names or if you, you know, obviously it would harm you if you buy the knockoffs and just pretend that you paid for the real thing. So the deal is when a shoe or piece of clothing rolls off the assembly line, it will get a physical marker that matches a specific entry in the Janela platform. That pairing will last for the life of the product. It can use different kinds of markers, including RFID, which is those radio tags, that can be read over the air, and two-dimensional tags, such as barcodes, that smartphone cameras can read. So in a sense, this is kind of like a combination of the universal product code and these other technologies like RFID and regular barcode and probably like Q codes or whatever the other stuff. So I don't know if there'll be something that goes farther. Usually there's unintended consequences. So if they have a specific ID, if this is like your shoes have a serial number, then you wonder, will the day come where someone can track where you've been because your shoes checked in everywhere you went. But apparently they're starting to move towards these other kinds of it's sort of mundane, but they're moving towards more Internet of Things for like core retail.
I don't know if I want my dirty laundry tweeting all over the internet.
Yeah, when your clothes start tweeting, you've got to wonder about that one. It's like, geez, when's he going to change his socks? Your shoes tweeted. Hopefully you need for that, there should be like a personal network or internet, you know. Maybe you could have clothes book, like, so it's like Facebook, but it's a place where you friend your clothes and then they can tell you what they're going to say.
These clothes are not compatible. Okay, no plaids and stripes. Let's try this again.
Your pants said, I know what you did. <It's>...
Your pants say, no, not yet. Not check yet. Scale.
That's RFID Garanimals.
So there's that. And here, this one isn't out yet, but it should be interesting. I must say, I think that one of the things that will help 4K get a lot more play is, first, there's movies coming on 4K Blu-ray, but now there's rumors that Sony has a 4K version of the PS4 called cleverly the PS4K or else the PS4.5. The code name, but you know that they must think this is serious. Gaming site Giant Bomb suggests the code name for the new console is Neo. So take the red pill. And they even provide hardware specs for the PlayStation 4's improved CPU, GPU, and higher bandwidth memory. So the idea is that it's an upgraded PS4 that can support a 4K display. Essentially,
yeah, I would know if they were serious if the code name was Xbox Killer.
I think Microsoft is coming out with one of them. They're going to call it Geo, so we'll have Neo and Geo.
I thought it was going to be the given their odd and bizarre naming conventions, that it would be the Xbox I. So, it's like negative one, sort of, after the Xbox One.
So Microsoft actually came out, I think, today, and they said that they are going to make no more Xbox 360s. They will still continue updates for it and support the product platform a little bit more, but they, you know, the product, I guess, is 10 years old at this point. And on top of all that, they will not be doing any incremental updates to the Xbox One like, you know, PlayStation is doing here with this one. So we will see, yeah.
So they're basically saying that so this could be an interesting competition, because the Xbox One doesn't do 4K right now. And so what they're saying is that you won't get 4K until there's a brand new next generation of Xbox.
Yeah, that's what they're pretty much what they're saying. And then they're also coming out, it looks like they're trying to consolidate Windows 10 and Xbox. So, you know, so they're at one game, play it on both platforms. So maybe, you know, they're just tied up with resources on that. But there are more and more 4K devices out there. It just seems like they would want to somehow get in on that, get in on the game.
Well, and you can get a 4K TV. Like 50-inch 4K TV is not... I wonder that might show the weakness of the cheap 4K TVs, because if it's doing the like 30 hertz refresh thing, then playing a console video game on it would seems to me like that would be an exercise in, that would be insanity inducing compared to, you know, the 60 hertz that most people are used to on their flat panel TVs. They're used to a 60 or 120 refresh rate, and 30 might be a little, the cheap ones might be a little weak, but there's still, it seems like there's a lot of TVs that are under $1,000 that have the 4K thing, and that paired with the 4K console could be a real killer for, that could be the thing that helps get 4K really to take off in people's houses, I would think. Essentially, they doubled the number of GPUs in it, and then sped up everything else—the memory and the processors. It's eight Jaguar cores. They're using AMD stuff, and an improved AMD GCN 36 GPUs in it, running at a higher speed. So, this is one I think, though, that obviously you want to see performance. This is one that's a good that you'll want to see evaluations of before a decision would be made. This isn't very long into their life cycle, so it could be a gamble if Microsoft is willing to let Sony do it. But you've got to wonder what happens if it takes off and it's a big deal. Then Microsoft may be regretting their decision to not follow along. Although maybe in a back room somewhere they've got theirs waiting just in case if they have to. And then here's one. So you could build your router into this company, Lian Li, I guess. Lian Li. They're no stranger to building desks with computers crammed into them, but now they have one that's for the standing desk people. You know, obviously you can justify more late night raids in your gaming unit than if you're also standing up and therefore kind of exercising. It's called the DK04. I'm sure that has nothing to do with Donkey Kong. It's a large chassis. It's a large chassis that lets you build your dream water-cooled PC. With support for 8 expansion slots. It has an electronically controlled motor that'll let you push the table to heights between 67.5 and 116 centimeters. I have no idea what that is in inches, but it is not an inexpensive little project. It's about $1,500 for the whole unit.
I did I did the conversion for you. It's about 6 stones and 2 bushel.
How many pecs?
8.5 with no, that's 2 bits left over.
What about in nautical miles?
What about metric pecs?
Gregory pecs.
The biggest change compared to their prior table units is that the underside of it tapers so that it's thicker at the back and thinner at the front, so that there's more room for your legs to fit underneath it. You know, I guess $1,500 is about the price of a stand-up, you know, adjustable height stand-up desk and a really good case. So it's, you know, I guess the decision is if you want them all in one thing or if you want to put one on top of the other.
I haven't seen their sitting desks, but I do have a couple. I will say this. So I've got a couple of Lee & Lee cases that I probably had for 10, 12, 13, 14 years.
Their cases were
years.
Pretty expensive, but
they were expensive,
nicely but
they
built.
Lasted forever. Yeah. I mean, they were a couple hundred when you could go and buy a beige case for $30. But these cases that I had, they outlasted multiple motherboards. And I still have one of them in my office at work. And it's, you know, we did actually cut a window out when we were doing all the case modding. But they're bulletproof, and they're heat sinks. The entire case sinks heat. So as far as if you want to computer running very, very cool, throw that in aluminum and just, you know, bound the board, throw everything down there.
Well, a case the size of a table, there's plenty of room to put in water cooling too to get that extra, you know, and also then you'd have something that I guess it's not really, technically it's not fanless, but it could be very, very quiet compared to most other ones. So, and you'd have less stuff around. I guess you'd have less pieces. You'd just have your, you know, if you had Bluetooth with it, then you'd have the only cable you'd have is whatever goes to your monitor, you know, power cable to your monitor and your, you know, video cable to the monitor. So not bad.
So I'm going to go back to Mr. Robot for a minute.
Yes.
Because I'm disappointed with myself because I didn't actually keep track of the DVD Blu-ray release, and it was actually in January.
Wow, January. You went a whole quarter.
Like, yeah, like a long time. I didn't even think about it, like that it was released. But so I'm disappointed with myself. Now, having said that, I've been searching around just to see like if there were special editions or something. I don't see that there were any.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the searches that popped up when I was looking for stuff was that you could buy it at Walmart. Which, whatever, buy Walmart. But there was one review at Walmart, and it was a one-star review.
What did it say?
So I'm like, this is at Walmart. I have to go read this. So it's a one-star review. And to give you a hint, it's a one-star review about Mr. Robot, and the account name is Slater Fan. And the review is, this is the best. I bought it after the Golden Globes. Love Christian Slater. But this was way too graphic. Awful language. Promotes drug use. Rating should have been more clear.
Is that a troll?
It's TVMA, right? It was a mature audience.
Yeah, but also I thought Walmart didn't sell MA stuff. I thought they were very vanilla, very...
Just don't tell them what the F stands for in F Society.
But it stands for fun.
Fun Society.
But anyway, yeah, that's all hilarious. But then I started thinking about it. I'm like, all right, you know, maybe they like K9 or maybe Pump Up the Volume.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, one of my favorite Christian Slater movies is Heathers. And that's not very, I mean, that's pretty dark and has language and violence and stuff as well. So I'm not sure what they're loving Christian Slater for that they're upset by.
They're loving the Christian part of Christian Slater, not the Slater
part. We totally were misled. So
I love my dead gay son.
Pump Up the Volume kind of has full circle because pirate radio, but what's K9? Is that?
He is a cop that has a dog as a partner.
Oh, okay. Well, is it kind of
cheesy? I never
cheesy?
Watched it,
okay.
But I'm pretty sure it was pretty cheesy.
Okay.
I actually never watched Pump Up the Volume. It's actually on my list to go back and watch.
There are a couple of things that are worthwhile. They did some... Actually, they did the... was that the Ham Proxy? Almost the version of the Ham Proxy that got canceled at DEF CON a while ago,
right.
That big talk.
Right.
That's pretty much where they stole that idea, I think. And there's some other hackery stuff like taping phones to phones, and you know, there's some touches.
I only saw like
a
couple scenes where he's like, you know, in his Jeep, like riding around broadcasting.
Yeah, well, they were actually FCC bands trying to triangulate him. Now I wonder if he had Pete's power source in there, because that's what I always thought. Like, you know, knowing that how many watts we've got to put off here at this radio station, how is he pumping up the volume out of a Jeep with like a 12-volt car battery?
No, you can do it because I had friends who ran CBs with like 150 watt linear amps.
Oh wow, just out of okay.
Just hooked them up to the car and fried, oh, yeah, fried their bodies.
There you go. There you, yeah, there
with,
you,
with an antenna right behind them.
There was a story about truckers. There was some truckers who basically they'd cranked so much power through their CBs that one of them, if he just popped his mic, he could make like Hondas shut down on the highway.
I mean,
they were close to him.
They were definitely like if you were.
I'm sure that's completely.
Every once in a while, you would have a trucker who was running his CB so hot that he would bleed over your radio if you were listening to the radio. Or even worse than that, there were times where like at like truck stops, where there was a like a stand up slot record player. You know, they would actually there'd be enough frequency that it would actually make their sounds over the speakers on those.
We are broadcasting on all frequencies.
Yeah, I mean
resistance is
they would bleed over, yeah. But they would put big linear amps on them just to get like I knew guys who had like home bases with like, you know, 60, 80 foot antennas and running I don't know how many linear amp watts just pushing. They were getting like 19, 21 mile range out of a CB that's not supposed to go over 5 watts.
Yeah, speaking as a ham, I'm fairly sure that's illegal.
It is, yeah.
But I guess if they're moving, that's kind of hard to police, you know. I guess they've got Christian Slater riding sidekick shotgun.
Anyway, Heathers is a really good movie. Really good movie, though. I really like
Heathers. Heathers is one of the best dark comedies I've ever seen.
Yeah, and the thing is, most of that, a lot of that language in that, like he wrote it, right, he wasn't like stealing like Valley language or something. Like he made up a lot of that stuff, and a lot of that stuff actually like became part of lexicon, like common lexicon that had never existed before he wrote that the script for that movie.
And then like when he was in the Jeep and he pulled up to the light and there were the girls in that convertible and he said, "I'll be back for you ladies later,"
with his Mr. Mike.
There's a Simpsons Mr. Microphone reference probably out there. You can go to the Simpsons.
I used to want one of those Mr. Microphones.
I was about to say, I wanted one too. I had some neighbors that had one, and
I
never got
one.
I had one.
I never had a Stretch Armstrong. I never had the Millennium Falcon. I never had an X-Wing fighter.
So was Heathers, was that, who did that? Was that,
help me out, writer?
Producer?
Producer? I don't know who directed it, produced it. I'm not sure.
I guess we have the internet here, don't we?
It was the anti-John Hughes probably did it.
Yeah. But that's it's
Winona Ryder and Christian Slater, which is not
brilliant,
your basic
brilliant movie.
Apple pie, purity, American youth for the 80s.
I was thinking about Twin Peaks. I was getting Twin Peaks and Heathers confused. I don't think I've seen Heathers. Or
really?
Twin Peaks. Yeah, I've seen either.
Heathers is worth watching. It's on Netflix. It's streaming on Netflix.
I actually just
right now.
Watched I just watched Twin Peaks for the first time ever like 2 years ago.
So
or a year
worthwhile
ago.
Or no, is it
Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
David
overall.
Lynch's
first few
I was
episodes.
That was, yeah.
The it's, first few episodes are really good.
I thought that it was pretty good, but I knew it was going to end and I was going to be pissed off, and that's what happened.
it has, you know, they didn't learn the lesson for Heroes and Lost and all these others where you have this like story, you know.
How did Twin Peaks learn a lesson
thing.
From Lost?
No, Lost and Heroes didn't learn a lesson from Twin Peaks of where you start and it's all this mysterious and people get obsessed, but unless you can stay ahead of everybody and have more ideas to keep it going, at some point people either catch up or they tune out.
And Twin Peaks was only 2 seasons, so not like Heroes 5 or whatever.
Well, Twin Peaks redefined television in a lot of ways. I mean, if you watch Twin Peaks now, without having seen it, you know, when it first came out, you've got this other stuff that, like Lost and shows like that, that have come along, and you go.
But I didn't watch any of those either.
Well, that's good. But there's still a lot of concepts in Twin Peaks that are picked up by modern day television. That when I watched Twin Peaks when it first came out, you didn't do things like that on television. That's what made it so great. But
like who shot JR?
But as Pete mentioned, you know, when you get that kind of ethereal in your storytelling, then the viewers tend to come up with their own meaning to what's being said. And then when it doesn't kind of dovetail with their notions of it, they get upset. They, you know, I thought, you know, so Twin Peaks has to be watched with the idea that each little vignette is kind of a story unto itself.
I mean, there was definitely some cool stuff. I mean, it's David Lynch. David Lynch is an interesting fellow, so there was definitely interesting stuff in the show. But yeah, I was pretty sure. I'm like, oh, it's going to end, and I'm going to be annoyed. And yeah, I was. But there was a lot of good stuff in it just as a series.
Did you watch Firewalk with Me, the movie?
No.
Oh, we still got that out there for you. But probably, I think if I was going to review it for you, I've not seen it, but I would bet that it'll start out interesting and you'll be upset by the end.
That's the way I feel about most David Lynch films, actually.
Cool. What was that? What's happening? And then, oh.
That's disappointing. Wow. Okay.
So for Blue Velvet, when they found the ear, that was the peak of the movie for you, and
well,
went down from there.
I mean, I watched Twin Peaks for one reason and one reason only, and that was to watch Agent Albert Rosenfeld. He was the best character.
Bad hearing.
He says, you listen to me while I admit to a certain cynicism. The fact is that I am a naysayer and hatchet man in the fight against violence. I pride myself in taking a punch, and I'll gladly take another because I choose to live my life in the company of Gandhi and the King. My concerns are global. I reject absolutely revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love, and I love you, Sheriff Truman.
Yeah, he wasn't a hard hearing guy. He was the guy that was a jerk
that
eventually got soft, but still was kind of a jerk.
He was funny.
Yeah, he did a really good job.
So funny.
Because he was always making fun of the local sheriffs, like every time he showed up, like, yeah, oh, we're gonna let Barney Fife here handle that.
And then the quotes to the recordings to whoever that Agent Cooper would send those back to
Diane.
Talk about Diane about how good the pie was and the coffee and yeah. Ah, nostalgic memories.
Do we have enough time to do Second Skin?
Well, first, we've got a couple last things on the Try by or Fry, and we've got about 10 minutes left, so I think we can cover them both. One is the self-driving electric car business is getting a little more competitive, or at least is showing signs that it could. A company called Leeco, L-E-E-C-O, but the E is second E is capitalized. It's a Chinese company, regardless of the sort of French-sounding name. basically, earlier this year, they announced investments in Faraday Future, which is the kind of mysterious electric car company, and Aston Martin, who we all know who they are. Leeco showed off its very first electric car that actually moves. They call it I'll do it Texas style, the Lessee vehicle. I'm sure it's Lessee, but let's see it move. The Lessee vehicle was driven out of a container from one end of the stage, and the CEO did a live demo of its self-driving and self-parking capability using voice commands via a mobile app. It right now this is a concept car, but it does appear to be a solid start. Let's see, in the official video, the car has conventional front doors and rear suicide doors. And somehow the back seats can apparently adapt to the shape of the passengers' bodies. That sounds like a concept car. There are, however, touch screens behind the front seats, which can take advantage of Leeco's rich video entertainment. The CEO added that the car will also do face recognition and self-learning, although, you know, they'll have to demo that. It's going to get its proper debut at the Beijing Auto Show on April 24th. I think the interesting thing is the idea that there's a large, large Chinese company that is ready to release their, you know, is working on their own electric vehicle. And, you know, it's kind of, it seems to me that puts it sort of, it's like computer manufacturing. Obviously, the capacity and ability to produce huge amounts of this kind of stuff exists in China. And so the way that there could be tons and tons of electric cars would be, it seems to me they are more like computers than they are like cars. And so it could be interesting to see what happens coming out of China on that. Plus, we haven't heard from the Koreans yet either, or Vietnam.
North Korea has one like that that can fly, is what I'm reading.
Yep.
Yeah. But only for the dear leader. And only, and he's the only one who can see it. It's kind of like Santa's sleigh.
It's actually, and it's more like Wonder Woman's plane. But...
jet. Well, and then here's one that could lead to either really interesting or very disturbing future geek gatherings. We're a lot closer to, we've gotten one step closer to a world where tattoos are made from LEDs and glowing watch faces embedded in your wrist can broadcast the time. It's the next phase of development of e-skin, and circuits and sensors contained in flexible plastic sheets are thinner than human skin. You just stick the sheets on your body, stand in sunlight to power them up, and glow all night long. They have pictures of this, and it looks like if you put plastic wrap on the back of your hand and connected up wires.
Maybe we'll see
it,
some at DEF CON.
That's probably really comfortable, too, I'm assuming.
It's been around for several years, but now a group of engineers has made a leap forward by integrating polymer LEDs into it. They explain their creation in Science Advances, showing how the new e-skin can display red, green, and blue light, which can be used for displaying biosigns. Like, their idea is that you could put this on someone, and instead of having a separate device for displaying the, you know, their blood oxygen and heart rate and those kinds of things, it'd be right on them. E-skin also measures heart rate the same way many smartwatches and fitness trackers do by measuring the absorption of green and red light into the blood in a process called photoplethysmography.
That's easy for you to say.
Photoplethysmography. The skin itself is only 3 micrometers thick, which the engineers proudly declare one order of magnitude thinner than Donald Trump's ego. than the epidermal layer of human skin. It's also stretchier than previous e-skin formulas, making it ideal for wearing during exercise. So now, no, I'm not naked. I'm wearing e-skin. As I
strategic LEDs.
Though some kinds of e-skin are powered by induction, the new type is solar-powered. Walking around in the sun should be enough to keep it well there. That just kills it. There's a bunch of geeks who will never be able to get their LEDs to go, because unless it's powered by fluorescent light. Of course, the lights aren't just for measuring vital signs. They can also be used for decoration. Clubbers of the future might program the lights to change color or patterns as their heart rate changes. Or it could be done algorithmically to produce different patterns and color combinations over time. When are you gonna, so you're going to have that to show us at the next geek gathering, Barrett?
If I can find it, that's kind of cool, but it's looking
software
like
not. Software defined e-skin?
We might. We'll have to do something. We've got 2.5 weeks, 2 weeks of the Geek Gathering, so we'll do something.
And our website features its first ever animated GIF.
Whoa.
GIF.
You got to look at it on your own computer.
Oh, I can't reach off you.
All right, well, that music signals that it's time for us to get out of here. We're so glad you could tune in. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Technology Bites. We're going to get out of here, but we'll see you next week. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Hopefully...
Don't forget to go to kpft.org and pledge this week.
Yes, kpft.org, pledge.
KPFT invites you to a celebration of the acclaimed program Democracy Now! And the extraordinary movements and heroes who have moved our country forward. So join us for a visit by Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! On Sunday, May 1st at 1 p.m. Amy Goodman will speak in Houston at the Carl Walker Jr. Multi-Service Center, located at 4300 Noble Street. Visit kpft.org or our Facebook event page for full details. You're encouraged to purchase tickets early because this event is expected to be at capacity. So visit kpft.org for tickets. Proceeds from this visit by Amy Goodman benefit KPFT Houston.
You can help KPFT by donating your unwanted vehicle. When you make a donation, your vehicle is resold at an auto auction and the proceeds help to support KPFT. KPFT accepts cars, trucks, motorcycles, and recreational vehicles. Your donation qualifies as a charitable deduction on your federal income tax return because KPFT is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. Just call 855-KPFT-CAR to make your donation. Please be ready to share the title, location, and general condition of your car. This information assists the tow company in scheduling appropriate towing arrangements. Again, the number is 855-KPFT-CAR to make your donation. Thanks. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.